Last week we started talking about the next generation. We talked about Isaac, and we saw his marrying within the family to keep the covenant of circumcision, to keep the covenant that God had made with Abraham and his descendants to be a separate cut-off people. Today we're going to continue on with Isaac, and we don't have a whole lot of stories about Isaac as compared to Abraham and his father and compared to his son Jacob. So we see a little bit more of Isaac today, but today we also introduce the next generation from that as we talk about Jacob and Esau. Okay, well, let's pick up. We're going to cover chapters 25 and 27 today. The plan is to read through those entire chapters and see what they have to say. Before we get into 25, let's put something in perspective. At the beginning of chapter 23, we see something that happened in the life of Isaac. At the beginning of 23, verses 1 to 2, when he was 37 years old, we see that Sarah, his mother, lived to be 127 years old. So she died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and weep over her. If you remember, Isaac was born when his mother, Sarah, was 90. So she died at 127. So Isaac was 37 years old when his mother died. What about his father? How much longer did his father live? Well, we see that at the beginning, or in the early parts of chapter 25, verses 7 and 8. It says, altogether, Abraham lived 175 years. So if Sarah died when she was 127, Abraham would have been 137 at the time. And living to 175, that was almost another 40 years before he passed on and joined his wife. We see that was about 100 years after he left Haran. So these 38 years that Abraham was without his wife Sarah, how did he handle the loneliness? We see that in the first part of chapter 25. starting in verse 1, it says, Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. And then it goes on in the next verses and identifies some of these people. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Midian, we'll see his descendants later with the Midianites. Moses gets involved with them. You see their descendants. Jokshan was a father of Sheba and Dedan. The descendants of Dedan were the Asherites. We'll see the Asherites later. The Letushites and the Luamites. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldah. All these were descendants of Keturah. In 1 Chronicles 1:32, it refers to Keturah as Abraham's concubine. And a concubine is a second wife that someone has, or whether a mistress or someone, a woman that he lives with without marrying her. But here we see that he took another wife, so he did marry her. And Keturah had other sons here, six sons for Abram. So you thought it was just Ishmael and Isaac. No, he had eight sons, something you may not have known. Well, what about then when he died? In verse 8, it says, Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. Well, what about the inheritance? How did Abraham handle that? Were all of the sons supposed to divide that wealth and divide what he had? If you remember back in Genesis 17 and elsewhere, God made it very clear to Abraham that Isaac was the chosen one, that Isaac was going to be the heir to all of Abraham's inheritance. How did Abraham handle that? If you remember back in Genesis chapter 21, verses 10, 14, and 20, it says in verse 10, this is Sarah speaking, says to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. Well, that matter distressed Abraham greatly. And in verse 14, after God speaks to him and tells him to listen to Sarah, that he would take care of Ishmael regardless, Abraham took some food early the next morning and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar and sent them on her shoulders and sent her off with the boy. And so we see he sent away Ishmael, sent away the firstborn son who was heir to the double inheritance. We'll talk more about this later. He was the firstborn son and the immediate in line, And Abraham sent him away so that Isaac then was the heir. But then now we've got six other sons after Keturah. So how does Abraham handle that? Verses 5 and 6 of chapter 25. Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac. Okay, so that's very clear. Isaac is the chosen one. Isaac is the child of the covenant. Isaac is the one through whom all these blessings are to be passed. And Abraham recognized that as being God's plan. And Abraham did that. Verse 6, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines, which we see is plural there, which is interesting, and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. So he took care of his other sons, gave them gifts. He was very wealthy, had plenty to spread out, and sent them away. And we see these people settled elsewhere. Out of all these sons, we then see Isaac is left with everything, and left with all the servants, left with the household, left with being the patriarch of the new next generation. Did any of them retain contact? Well, going on in chapter 25, after Abram died, we see in verse 9, his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite. That's the field that Abraham had bought from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. Okay, after Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Beer Lahai-Roi. So we see that Ishmael was still around. There was still a contact there. So that when Abraham died, word got to Ishmael, and Ishmael came and joined Isaac in burying his father. We don't see great animosity there to a degree. However, if you keep going through verse 18, you get in verses 12 through 18, you get the story of Ishmael, and it says, this is the account of Abraham's son Ishmael, whom Sarah's maidservant Hagar the Egyptian bore to Abraham. And these are the names of his sons listed in order of their birth. And it goes through a list of the 12 sons of Ishmael. And like verse 16 says, these are the names of the 12 tribal rulers according to their settlements and camps. Altogether, Ishmael lived 137 years, so he was blessed with a long life as well. He breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. His descendants settled in the area from Havilah to Shur, near the border of Egypt as you go towards Asher. And they lived in hostility towards all their brothers. So we see that there's, you would expect some animosity, especially since Ishmael was sent away because of Isaac. But for the sake of their father, they came together and buried Abraham together. So that we see some contact there. All right, now Abraham's died. We then have the story of verse 19. This is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel the Aramean from Padan Aram, and sister of Laban the Aramean. That's the story we looked at last week. So now the writer of the book of Genesis shifts from the story of Abraham, who's now passed on, to the story of Isaac. What's interesting is that very quickly it then shifts into the story of the next generation. And so we see some of that. There's a lot of parallels between these generations. Some stuff that we see in with Abraham, we see it with Isaac, we see it with the next generation, we see it with the next generation. So let's look at some of that as we go through this story. As an example, last week we saw that Abraham, when he went to a foreign land, when he went to Egypt, when he went to the land of the Philistines, in both times he didn't trust God and instead told people that his wife Sarah was his sister because he didn't trust that God would protect him. And that created all sorts of problems we saw. Last week we saw Isaac did the exact same thing. When he went to the land of the Philistines, he told people that she's my sister because he didn't trust that God would protect him. So we've got that commonality between those generations. Let's look at some more commonalities. In this generation, we saw that this was basically an impossible generation, that God got involved with even making this generation possible. We've looked at lots of stories. Genesis 18, obviously, in 11 to 14 is when the three visitors come and tell Abraham and Sarah that they're going to have a kid within a year, and it's impossible. Okay, Abraham would be 100 years old, Sarah would be 90 years old, both physically past childbearing years, but yet God would bless them. God is creator of all, in control of all nature, and God made it possible and brought this miraculous birth of Isaac, God's covenant child. Well, in chapter 25, we see something similar. Verse 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Just like Sarah had been barren, Rebecca was barren. And we see that the Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebecca became pregnant. Okay? So, just as we saw the inability to have children with Abraham's generation, now we have that with this generation. Second half of verse 26, we see that Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Well, if you remember back, well, even just the verse that we just read in verse 20, Isaac was 40 when he married Rebekah, so for 20 years they tried to have kids, couldn't have kids, and 20 years later, when he's 60, they're able to have kids. God enables Rebekah to become pregnant, okay, through prayer, because they prayed to Yahweh on behalf of Rebekah. We see similar things in future generations. In the next generation, in chapter 29, verse 31, we see that, we'll get into this story. You've got a little competition going on between a couple of sisters, Leah and Rachel, for having kids. And we see that Rachel was barren, the preferred wife of Jacob. And Leah had kids. Rachel was barren, but then later God opened Rachel's womb, and we had Joseph, and then later Benjamin. So we see God got involved in miraculous births in each of these generations of this of these patriarchs. We also see some other things. Okay, back to Genesis 25 in our story. How were Rebekah's troubles in pregnancy a sign of things to come? Verses 22 and 23, it says, the babies. Well, we just saw that Rebekah became pregnant in verse 21. Well, now it says the babies. Well, she's got twins here. Jostled each other within her. And that jostled is not just kind of a playful thing. This is like fighting and pretty tough to have this going on inside of you. And so Rebekah said, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of Yahweh. And Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Okay, so we have a prophecy of what's going to happen. And it's a sign of things to come. There would be two nations. One would be stronger than the other. The older would serve the younger. We see similar sorts of things in these other generations. Back the previous generation, we saw in Genesis 17:20-21 that Abraham says, well, if only Ishmael could live under your covenant, under your blessing, because he's this great kid. This is when God's telling him that he's about to bring Isaac. And God says, well, as for Ishmael, I've heard you. I will certainly bless him. I will make him fruitful and will greatly increase his numbers. He'll be the father of 12 rulers, and I will make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. And we see that out of both sons of Abraham came nations, came power. And we also see that the covenant would go to the younger, not to the older. And the oldest son was a big thing, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in this case, and in both generations' case, that was flopped. What about the next generation? Well, in Genesis 49 is where we see Jacob giving blessings to his sons. And so you would think, okay, well, the first son is Reuben, firstborn son is Reuben, and so he would be the heir. He would be the one to receive the passing of the covenant through him and his descendants, right? Well, Jacob says in verse 3 of 49, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power, but turbulent as the waters. You will no longer excel because you went on your onto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. So Reuben would not be the covenant child, would not be the firstborn heir, would no longer excel. And he then goes on and talks about Simeon and Levi. And these are stories that we'll look at, and we'll understand more about what this is. But then what you see in verse 8 is Judah, your brothers will praise you, your hand will be on the necks of your enemies, your father's sons will bow down to you. You're a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son, like a lion. He crouches and lies down like a lioness. Who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nation is his. What does all that mean? Well, this is all a prophecy of God sending the Messiah through Judah's descendants. Judah is the fourth son, not the first, not the second, not the third, but the fourth. So you don't see the firstborn rights, you don't see the covenant rights going to the firstborn as the culture would expect. Instead, in each of these generations, from Abraham it doesn't go to Isaac, it goes to, or Ishmael, it goes to Isaac. From Isaac it doesn't go to Esau, the firstborn, it goes to Jacob, the secondborn. From from Jacob it doesn't go to the firstborn Reuben, or even the second or thirdborn Simeon or Levi, but instead to the fourthborn Judah. What about the next generation? Well, in Genesis 48, we see that Jacob tries to bless Ephraim, who is Joseph's second son, and Joseph says, "No, no, Dad, you've got it wrong. Put your hand on Manasseh, he's the older one." And Jacob goes, "I know that, but the younger will be greater than the older. Both will be great, but the younger will be the greater one." And so here we see in each one of the generations of the patriarchal stories, we see that it's not the firstborn, which is very interesting, because the firstborn, being the firstborn, conveyed a lot of privileges and responsibilities. The birthright belonged to the firstborn. In Genesis 27, verse 4, we see, for instance, that this is Isaac, and he says to Esau, "Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me to eat, so that I may give you my blessing before I die." So being the firstborn, the birthright conveyed the blessings of the father. The father's blessings would go through the firstborn, or to the firstborn. Verse 29, we see, "May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers. May the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed and bless you be blessed." So you see some of the blessing of the father here, but what this is also showing you is that the firstborn birthright would also bring the leadership of the tribe and leadership of the family. Okay, that was expected. That was part of the culture. And then Deuteronomy 21:17 is reminds us of part of what the firstborn dealt with. It talks here that the firstborn receives a double share of all he has. So when you divided up the inheritance, if you had three kids, okay, three sons, you wouldn't give each son a third. Instead, each son would receive a quarter, but the firstborn would receive two quarters. So the firstborn receives a double share. So you take the number of sons, add one, and each son would receive that fraction of the inheritance, except for the firstborn, who would receive a double portion. So you see the birthright that was conveyed, and in each case it was expected to go to the oldest son, but it didn't. Why didn't it? Was it because the fathers didn't want it to go to the firstborn? Well, let's look at those. In Genesis 17:18, remember Abraham says to God, "If only Ishmael may live under your blessing. If only these promises and the birthright that you're talking about and conveying of the covenant to the next generation would go to Ishmael, my oldest son." That's what Abraham wanted. But God said, "No, that's not my plan." In Genesis 25:28 and 27:32-33, we will look at this today, and this is a big part of our story today, and we see that Esau was loved by Isaac. These parents took choices. They took preferences. And Isaac, his favorite son was Esau, the oldest son. Rebekah, the mom, her favorite son was Jacob, the youngest. And so Isaac planned to give the birthright and give the covenant blessing to Esau. Through some trickery, we see that it ended up going to Jacob, and Isaac was extremely upset. He trembled violently, it says in those verses. So we see how serious it was to him, conveying of this birthright and conveying of the covenant and conveying of the blessings. But we also see how importantly he wanted that to go to Esau. The next one, we already looked at Genesis 49, verse 3. That's where he talks about, you know, Reuben, you're my might, my strength, my power, my honor, but you're not the one, okay? I want you to be. You're my firstborn. And then likewise, we see the correction in Joseph wanting the blessing to go to Manasseh instead of to Ephraim that Grandpa was giving, that Jacob was giving. So what is God's message to us through this? What does all this mean? Well, Romans 9 gives a good summary of this, starting at verse 10. It says, oh, not only that, but Rebekah's children had one and the same father, our father Isaac. Yet before the twins were born, or had done anything good or bad, in order that God's purpose and election might stand, not by works, but by him who calls, she was told, the older will serve the younger. That decision was made by God before those people existed, before they were born, before they were conceived. It was part of God's plan. This next verse is kind of confusing, and we won't address it right now, but it says in verse 13, just as it is written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. What then shall we say? Is God unjust? No, not at all. Because he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I have compassion. It does not therefore depend on man's desire or effort, but on God's mercy. This is one of the key verses for today, if you look back on page 1. It does not depend on man's desire or effort, but on God's mercy. There's nothing we can do to screw up God's plan. We see this over and over again in the Bible. We see people trying to change God's plan, people trying to make things happen the way they want them to happen, but God's plan prevails. God will make his plan happen regardless of how we try to screw it up. And in each one of these cases, each generation, the father wanted the covenant birthright, the promises, the blessings of the covenant to go through his firstborn son. In every case, God had a different plan. And it's God's plan that won out, not the Father's desire. Okay? All right, well, let's look at the story of these two sons in this next generation, Jacob and Esau. What was the birth order of Jacob and Esau? Chapter 25, verse 24. When the time came for Rebekah to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red. His whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. We saw that already. Okay? Now, if you knew some Hebrew, some of those verses would make a little more sense. So what do those things mean? Well, Esau was named Esau because his body was like a hairy garment, okay, real hairy. You know, we talk about babies coming out with a head full of hair. Well, he had a body full of hair. Well, Esau, the word Esau means hairy. So mom and dad named him Hairy because he was hairy. But what do you think of when you think of hairy? You think of rugged, rough and tumbling, a man of the wild, you know, gentle Ben kind of thing, a wildness there. And we'll see that that plays out with Esau. Esau was also known as Edom, or the people who descended from Esau were called the Edomites. And the land that they lived in was called the land of Edom. The word Edom means red. Well, We see that he came out and his body was red. He had this red body. We also see that he had reddish hair. We'll see that in the story as well. And there's this thing that we're about to look at with red stew that also deals with Esau. So there's this red part that it's kind of another nickname for him. All right, what about the other one? After this, verse 26, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Yaakov, Jacob. What does Yaakov mean? That means he grasps the heel. Okay, so real creative. Just as you know, the American Indians named kids after the first thing they saw or something like that. That's what we have here. They named him, he grasps the heel. But that means more than that. That's also a euphemism. That's also a phrase that in that culture meant deceive. He deceives. It's similar to what we would say today with you're pulling my leg. Same sort of thing. And he was a pulling your leg kind of person, a deceiver. And his name dealt with being a deceiver, and he lived up to his name. We'll see as we go through his story today and in next week's lesson. Now we see his descendants, and then his name was changed, and his descendants were called by that name, and that name is Israel. Okay, Israel. And Israel means he struggles with God. In Genesis 32, you've got the story of Jacob struggling with God and changing his name then to Israel. But we also have all the stories of his descendants and all their struggles with God and all their struggles with trying to get away from God, God calling him back, and all of that. So it's a very fitting name for this people that we're going to be looking at over the next few months. Okay, so that's the names. Esau, or hairy. Edom means red. Jacob means deceiver, or grasps the heel. And Israel means he struggles with God. All of those names are very descriptive and refer to these people and their stories. Let's look at Esau. Let's look at this first son. How did his name fit him? Well, we saw that his name, Esau, means hairy, which kind of implies a ruggedness and a wildness, right? Well, let's go on. Verse 27, it says, the boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So we see that his name fit him. He was a wild kind of a man of the open country, a skillful hunter kind of person. What about his nickname, Red? What about his nickname, Edom? How did that fit him? 27 to 30. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. That's why he was also called Edom. So it wasn't just because of his red body and red hair, but because of this red stew we see. Okay. What about Jacob? How did his name of deceit, being the deceiver, fit him? Well, let's go on. Verse 31. Jacob replied, well, first, sell me your birthright. Okay, he just wants a bowl of stew. He's hungry. Give your brother some stew. But instead, Jacob says, I'll give you some stew, but first, you sell me your birthright. I came out just a half a minute after you, or a few seconds after you, but yet you get the claim for being the firstborn and the birthright that goes to the firstborn. You sell me your birthright and I'll give you some stew. Esau's response, look, I'm about to die. What good is a birthright to me? A little over-exaggerated here. The guy came in from the country and he thinks he's going to die because he can't get the food. So he says, what good is a birthright to me? And Jacob said, swear to me first. So Esau swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. So you see that he deceived Esau out of his birthright for stew. Later on in chapter 27, when we look at it, verse 36, Esau recognizes that. He says, Esau says, isn't he rightly named Jacob or the deceiver? He's deceived me these two times. First he took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing. And we'll look at that in just a bit. So you can see Jacob was the deceiver. And it's not just those two stories. Next week we'll talk about Jacob fleeing and going to Laban, his uncle. And we see a lot of deceit in their dealings there as well. A lot of this has to do with the family. Laban we see as a big deceiver. We see Rebekah in today's story being a deceiver. So there's a little family element here. Okay, how upset was Esau that he had lost his birthright? Okay, we see in chapter 27, the verse I just read, he was bothered by it. But verse 34 of chapter 25, right when he did it, says, Jacob gave Esau some bread and some of the lentil stew. He ate, he drank, then he got up, and he left. So Esau despised his birthright. You don't see him being upset. You see, ah, good stew. Oh, this is great. Thanks. Ah, and he goes. He's not upset about giving his birthright over. He despised his birthright. Okay, what does this say about Esau's discernment and his faith? Well, in Hebrews 12, the writer in verse 16 says, see that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Now, that's a pretty costly mistake here. But he didn't even care. So there we have the introduction of Jacob and Esau and the personalities involved with these guys. So let's go on and skip. We already covered chapter 26 last week. So let's move on to chapter 27. Time goes on and Isaac's getting old. We saw last week that when Abraham got old and after his wife died, he decided he had some business to take care of before he died, and that's when he sent his chief servant to go get a wife for his son Isaac. But now Isaac's getting old, and he decides something needs to happen here as well. So what does he need to take care of before he dies? Chapter 27. When Isaac was old, and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and he said to him, my son? Here I am, he answered. Isaac said, I am now an old man, and I don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare the kind of tasty food I like, and bring it to me to eat so that I may give you my blessing before I die. So he thinks, he doesn't know how much longer he's going to live. He knows he's old, he can't see, he doesn't know how much longer he'll be around, and it's time to pass on the blessing. Pass on the father's blessing. And he prepares Esau and asks Esau to do that. We see that in the other generations. We already mentioned the one where Abraham sends his servant to get the covenant wife for Isaac in Genesis 24. In Genesis 48, we see that Jacob's about to die, and then that's when he, in chapter 49, gives these blessings and promises and prophecies of what's going to happen to all of his sons and his sons' descendants. We see in Genesis 50, verse 24, when Joseph's about to die, he gives promises to his brothers, okay, to the tribes and his brothers' descendants. Now, what's interesting is we get into this story. You've heard this story before. And how old do you think these boys were, Jacob and Esau? Okay, my impression when I heard the stories is they were teenagers, maybe. Maybe early adulthood, 20, something like that. If you look backwards at chapter 26, verse 34, and this is all sequential, this is all chronological, and so before this story, we see that when Esau was 40 years old, he married these women. So they were at least 40 years old at this time. They were full adults. They were not kids, as it might appear in the story. They act pretty childish, but these were full adults. Was Isaac on his deathbed here? Well, in Genesis 25, verse 26, we see that Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth, and so he was at least 100, right? So 60 years old plus they were at least 40. The boys were at least 40 years old, if not older than that. So he was at least 100. If you look at some other math, You see, the oldest he could have been is about 130. In Genesis 35, verse 28, we see that Isaac lived 180 years. So the oldest he could have been was 130. He at least lived 50 more years, if not 80 more years, somewhere between 50 and 80 more years. So he was not on the deathbed as he thought he was. But you see, he was failing in health. Now the point of that is also that these boys were at least 40, but they could have been as old as the upper end would be 70, somewhere in that range. So these were full-grown adults that knew better and knew how they should have operated. Now Isaac's plan in passing on this birthright to Esau, was that in line with God's plan? Well, remember back in 25, verse 23. When God was speaking to Rebekah, he said, two nations are in your womb, two people from within you will be separated, one people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So God's plan was that the older would serve the younger. The covenant would go through the younger, would go through Jacob. Okay? That was God's plan. Okay, so Esau was going against God's will here. So we don't see him being very righteous and in tune with God's plan in this story. What about Rebecca? Okay, what about the mama? How righteous was she? Well, she overhears what Isaac says, and let's see her response, starting at verse 5. Now Rebecca was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebecca said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father just the way he likes it. Then you take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." Okay? How righteous is she? She overhears, but her plan wasn't righteous either. She planned to deceive Isaac to steal God's blessing away from Esau and give it to Jacob. Okay, again, her favorite son was Jacob. Esau's favorite son was Esau. And here she was trying to deceive and cheat Isaac out of this blessing that he was wanting to give to Esau. What about Jacob? Okay, he hears his mom tell him to do this. Now he's 40-something years old, right? How does he respond to what his mother's instructions here? Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? It would appear that I would be tricking him, and that would bring a curse down on myself rather than a blessing." So was Jacob concerned about sinning? Was he concerned about deceiving his father? No, he was concerned about getting caught. He didn't care about, and it didn't bother him that he would be deceiving his father. Getting caught part was the part that bothered him. How did Rebekah ease Jacob's concern? Well, in verse 13 she says, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me." Okay? So she says, "Don't you worry about that. If there's a curse, it'll fall on me. This is my idea. This is my plan. I'm not afraid of the curse." Well, what curse? This is passing on God's blessing. This would be God's curse. This would be a curse that would come, that God would be involved with. So she's not even afraid of that. Now, how detailed was her plan of deceit here going on? So Jacob went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which he had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son, Jacob, the tasty food and the bread she had made. So she thought of everything. He's got to be wearing Esau's clothes. Now the thing is that Isaac couldn't see, but his other senses were heightened, and he could smell, he could feel, He could listen, and he would sense things. So she had Jacob wear Esau's clothes, put some of the goat skin so it'd be rough and hairy feeling in case Isaac touched him. Okay, so she thought of it all. Cooked the food to Isaac's liking, that just the way Isaac likes it. All right? So you see, Isaac was at fault. Rebecca was at fault. What about Jacob? Well, he obviously goes through with it. How hard did Jacob work to deceive his father? Verse 18 and 19, it says, he went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered. "Who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you've told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." So what does he do here? He flat out lies and says, "I am Esau, your son, your firstborn. You've told me to go get this food, and I brought you this food." So he is straight out lying to his dad. It's not a white lie. This is a full, bold, blatant one here. Okay, Isaac asked his son, verse 20, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" Jacob answers, "The Lord, Yahweh, your God, gave me success." Well, look what he's doing now. Now he's bringing God into the picture. He's including God in his lie. 21:23. "Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not.'" He obviously was sensing something's not right here. "Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' But he didn't recognize him because his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him." So you've got these goat skins over his hands that made him feel hairy. And so he went along with this and was playing along. So Jacob was deceiving him through that goat skins. Okay, going on, verse 24. Isaac just doesn't feel right about this. He says, "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. Jacob replied, "I am." So again, he claimed to be Esau. Just continuing on, digging this hole of lies here. Verse 25. "Then he said, 'My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing.' So Jacob brought it to him and he ate, and he brought some wine and he drank." So he served him this meal that Isaac had asked Esau to prepare and to serve him. So he's going through with this act. He's not only talking, but he's doing it as well, and gave this food and wine just as Isaac had asked. And then next couple verses. "Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come here, my son, and kiss me.' So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed.'" Okay? So, again, he's got his clothes, Esau's clothes on, and the smell of Esau that's carrying on. So he's hit all the senses, and he's completing this deception completely. Now, what's interesting here is this betrayed with a kiss. Okay, he kissed him. Where do we see this again? With the covenant child of God? If we see Judas kissing Jesus to betray him. And so we see a little preview of that with Jacob kissing his father Isaac and deceiving him. In this story, we see the whole family's all screwed up. We see that Isaac was wrong in this story and went against God's will and God's plan in trying to give the birthright and trying to give the covenant blessing to his oldest son Esau. We see that Rebekah was wrong in deceiving her husband Isaac to get the birthright and to get the covenant blessing elsewhere. We see that Jacob was just wicked through his deception of his father Isaac. We've already seen that Esau had no discernment, and he despised his birthright for a bowl of stew. So this whole family is all messed up. But yet, God can use messed up families to fulfill his plan. So let's go on. Esau, let's bring Esau back into the picture. Does he know what just happened? Going on, verse 30. "After Isaac finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, Well, then his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared tasty food and brought it to his father. And then he said, "My father, sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." So, you see, he has no idea what went on when he was out hunting. His dad sent him out to find this, to hunt fresh game, prepare it and feed him so that he could get the blessing. Jacob's doing all this deceiving while Esau's gone. Esau comes back, thinks everything's just fine, prepares the meal and goes to serve his dad right after Jacob had just finished it. Okay. How did Isaac and Esau then react when they learned what had happened? Verse 32. His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "Well, I'm your son," he answered, "your firstborn Esau." Well, Isaac trembled violently and said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, me too, my father." So you see that they were both very upset. You see, Isaac trembled violently. Esau screamed and yelled and was all upset. What's interesting is that Isaac did not try to take back the blessing. He knew he couldn't. He knew this was a blessing from God. He knew that he had passed on God's blessing and God's promises of the covenant to Jacob, and there wasn't a thing he could do about it. Okay? It would happen. Just as God had planned. But why? So Esau says, "But Dad, don't you have a blessing for me? Give me a blessing too." Well, it would be easy for him to give a nice blessing to Esau as well, right? Well, let's look. You know, we skip this. Let's look in verse 27 or 28 through 29. We see the blessing that Isaac gave to Jacob. He says, "May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and people bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed and those who bless you be blessed." Okay, so there you got the blessed be a blessing, all of that, a lot of the promises from Abraham, that God given Abraham and his descendants. But, you know, if you look at that, certainly Isaac would be able to pass on some of that. You know, may God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and people bow down to you. Now, he couldn't give the rest. The next part, to be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you, that's already been given to Jacob. But then he could also say, may those who curse you be cursed and those who bless you be blessed. So he could, you would think, you know, if it's just a matter of giving them a blessing, but Isaac recognizes that it's not him giving the blessing. He's just passing on God's blessings and God's curses. So when Esau asks for another blessing, how does Isaac respond? Verse 35. Okay. Isaac responds, "Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing." Esau said, "Isn't he rightfully named Jacob? He's deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing." But then he asked, "Haven't you reserved any blessing for me?" Isaac answered Esau, "I've made him lord over you, and have made all of his relatives your servant, his servants. And I've sustained him with grain and new wine. What can I possibly do for you, my son?" So you see, he's wishing he could, but he knows that this promise and this blessing that he gave was binding and irrevocable, and it's God's blessing. So there's nothing he could do to take that back. So what is the blessing that Isaac gives Esau? Verse 38. Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. As you can see, the devastation here from losing this blessing. He does realize the importance and the criticality of this. Even though he despised his birthright earlier for a bowl of stew, now losing the blessing is a big, big deal. So his father Isaac answered him, "Your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness. away from the dew of heaven above. You'll live by the sword, and you will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you'll throw his yoke from off your neck. So rather than a blessing, what the best Isaac has for his favorite son Esau is a curse. He would live away from God's blessings. He would live by the sword. He would serve his brother. Not what Isaac had in mind. Not what Esau wanted. Okay? So, Isaac did recognize that this was from God and he couldn't do anything about it. Well, if you were Esau, how would you feel about your brother right now? Esau was devastated. Esau was extremely mad about his brother. What would you do? Well, you kind of get some ideas of Cain, especially from a godless person like Esau. We see pictures of Esau and we don't see a relationship with God with him that we saw with Abraham or even with Isaac to a degree. So how does Esau reply in verse 41? Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing that his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, and then I will kill my brother Jacob." So he planned to kill his brother, just as Cain had killed his brother. Why? Out of jealousy, out of the blessing that came to his brother from his father, and didn't come to him. Same deal with Cain. Okay, God the Father had blessed and had approved of Abel's offering, and not of Cain's second leftovers kind of offering. But he did want to wait. He didn't want to do it and upset his father. So he said, as soon as Dad dies, Jacob's a dead man. Well, word of this gets to Rebekah, 42. When Rebekah was told what her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury subsides. When your brother's no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, or I'll send word for you to come back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day?" So she plans on protecting him, and she tells him to go away, far away, get away from your brother as far as you can. I'll stay here and I'll watch, and as soon as Esau is not as upset with you anymore, then I'll send back for you. You can go to my brother's house, Laban, in Haran, and stay there. And so she sends him there. Well, but she can't do that. This is an Isaac thing. What would Isaac say about why is Jacob leaving? So Rebekah deceives Isaac to get Isaac to think this is his idea and to send Jacob off to Laban. So we see deceit even more. Verse 46. Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am disgusted with living because of these Hittite women." Okay, what Hittite women is he talking to? Talking about back in 26, the end of chapter 26, we see in 34 and 35, when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and also Basemath, daughter of Elon the Hittite. They were a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. So Rebekah uses that as part of her ploy to get Isaac to send Jacob. We see, she says, "I'm disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. If Jacob takes a wife from among these women of this land, from Hittite women like these, my life will not be worth living." Okay, so she complains to Isaac about these Hittite women. Well, what does Isaac immediately think? Well, yeah, you know, he shouldn't have married those women. Dad even sent for a wife among the family because we're not supposed to intermarry with these people here. So that's coming to mind here with Isaac. Going on. So Isaac called for Jacob and blessed him and commanded him, "Do not marry a Canaanite woman. Go at once now to Padan Aram, to the house of your mother's father Bethuel. Take a wife for yourself there from among the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." Okay? So he recognizes the calling to be a separate, cut-off people. And so he sends Jacob to go find a wife with Laban. So now it's Isaac's idea for Jacob to leave. But you see, the whole reason behind this was Rebecca trying to protect the skin of her son, her favorite son, Jacob, and having him sent off. Okay? Now, word of this obviously gets to Esau, and he finds out, oh, they don't like these, my parents don't like these Hittite women that I wasn't supposed to marry outside the family. So what does he try to do here? Verses 6 and 9 of through 9 of chapter 28 says, now Esau learned that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him to Padan Aram to take a wife from there, and that when he blessed him, he said, do not marry a Canaanite woman. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and mother and gone to Padan Aram. Padan Aram just means the plain of Aram. Esau then realized how displeasing the Canaanite women were to his father Isaac. So he went to Ishmael and married Mahalath, the sister of Nebaioth, and daughter of Ishmael, son of Abraham, in addition to the wives he already had. So he sees that he did wrong by marrying the two Hittite women. So, and he was supposed to marry in the family, so he goes to marry in the family, but his discernment's not there. He goes to the black sheep of the family. He goes to Ishmael's family and marries, takes a wife from the family of Ishmael. Okay? So, you see his discernment, and him trying to get a blessing here. So what you have here is you've got a screwed up family, and it's just going to continue to get more screwed up as we go on. But this is supposed to be a family of faith. This is supposed to be a family of God's blessing. Well, it is a family of God's blessing. Regardless of how screwed up we get, God is still there for us. And God, we cannot screw up God's plan, no matter how screwed up we are. What about the faith of these people? Let's look at that. Well, Isaac. How did Isaac's faith, or his lack of faith, reveal itself in our story today? Well, in Genesis 25:28, we see that he loved Esau more than Jacob, and therefore, in chapter 27, he planned to give God's blessing to his oldest son, Esau, rather than to the one that had already been chosen by God, Jacob. So you don't see that communing with God like you saw with his father, Abraham. How about Rebekah's faith or lack of faith? Well, in Genesis 25:28, we see that Rebekah loved Jacob more than she loved Esau. So she had the other preference. So therefore, chapter 27, she planned and helped Jacob deceive his father Isaac to receive the blessing. She taught him a lot of deceit. He became very good at this, as we'll continue to see. And then in verse 46, we saw that she deceived Isaac by getting him to come up with the idea to send Jacob away to Padan Aram. Her desire was for protection, but she used the ploy of getting a wife from the family. What about Jacob's faith or lack of faith? Well, in Genesis 25:31, we saw where he deceived his brother Esau for his birthright rather than leaving. You know, the whole thing of this is okay, what Jacob did end up leading to fulfilling God's plan, right? Of passing the birthright on to Jacob, which was God's chosen. If he had not done that, you know, is this the way that God intended it to happen? No, if he had not done that, God would still make sure that the birthright passed correctly. Okay? Jacob should have, Esau should have, Isaac should have, Rebecca should have trusted God to carry things out. But in each case, each one of them got involved and tried to screw things up and tried to get control of the situation rather than leaving things in God's control. So Jacob deceived his brother Esau for his birthright. Chapter 27, we see that he wasn't even afraid of sinning. He wasn't afraid of deceiving his father and lying to his father. And he lied a lot to his father in many ways, we saw. What he was concerned about was getting caught. Okay? Are we reluctant to sin, or are we only reluctant to getting caught? Good question to think about for yourself. We also see that he, in the next verses, we see his deceit, deceiving Isaac for the blessing. What about Esau's faith or lack of faith? Well, we saw he wasn't very discerning. He sold his birthright and despised his birthright for a bowl of stew. Pretty costly bowl of stew. We see in Genesis 26, at the end of that, and also in chapter 28, that he married outside of the covenant family. He wasn't concerned with trying to do what was right. Rather, his second marriage was trying to make things right because he saw that his parents weren't happy with his current choice of wives. But yet then he wasn't looking to God for guidance and looking with discernment for what God wanted him to do. 27 verse 38 is, even though God's blessing had already been given, he still pushed his father to give him a blessing. Okay, still pushed for that. Genesis 27 verse 41, he held a grudge and planned to kill his brother Jacob as soon as his dad died. We see that that was many years later when Isaac was 180, but would he have still held on to that grudge? We'll see more about that next week. Okay, when we talk about Jacob leaving and then coming back. So this faithless, screwed up family, deceiving, doing what they want to do kind of family, why did God continue to bless and protect this family? Well, it all goes back to what we've already looked at in the past. Just one out of many example verses is Genesis 22, verses 17 and 18. This is after Isaac was almost killed by Abraham when God told Abraham and tested Abraham with sacrificing his one and only son that he loved. And he says, I swear by myself, declares Yahweh, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. Why did God continue to bless this family? Why did God continue to protect this family, even though they were acting no better than any of the other families anywhere around? Purely out of his divine grace and mercy. They didn't deserve it. Also, in response to the faithfulness of their father, Abraham. And we see that many times, that the faith of Abraham, God made promises to Abraham to be fulfilled through his descendants. And no matter how screwed up his descendants were, no matter what his descendants did, God remained faithful to his promises. So no matter how we screw up, no matter how far away from God's will and God's plan we go, how much trouble we create for God, God is still faithful to his promises, and he promises to continue to offer his forgiveness and to call us back to him and to have a place prepared for us if we just come back and live in his family. Okay? Let's close with prayer. God, our Father, we thank you for the stories that you give us, including those stories of just really screwed up people, because we're screwed up people too. The sins that we see in the lives of Isaac and Rebekah, in the lives of Jacob and Esau, are sins that we all relate to. We've been deceitful. We've tried to do things our way instead of your way. We've tried to convince people to do things that it's not necessarily in their interest or your interest. We've despised valuable things, valuable gifts and blessings that you've given us, and we haven't appreciated and respected those. We ask you for our forgiveness. We thank you for this story because it reveals that even though we can be so screwed up as this family was, that you still love us and you still call us back to you. You still offer your forgiveness. You still want to have us living in a living relationship with you. We thank and praise you for that. We thank you for loving us so much and calling us back so desperately that you sent your only son, Jesus Christ, to die on our behalf, to take the pain and suffering that we deserve for rejecting you and take that upon himself so that we can then be with you now and forever. In his name, Jesus. Amen.